when you're looking for a consultant, know what you want that consultant to do. You should have some idea or some clarity about the kind of expertise or assistance you're trying to get from that individual. Be honest about your willingness to change. A lot of organizations say they want to change, but when the consultant shows up, it's obvious that maybe they don't want to change. You want to find somebody that's focused on your needs, not their needs. And what I mean by that is a consultant, I need to know what the organization's needs are and then focus on that, but not what my personal needs are in that consulting opportunity.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest, a beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with David Taylor, nurse leader, consultant, and educator who examines the challenges operating rooms and central sterile departments face as healthcare leaders manage their practice in the surgical services environment. David is a member of the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses, AORN, and recently was elected by the AORN membership for a two-year appointment on the nominating committee. He maintains membership in the Business Industry Consulting and Leadership Specialty Assemblies and is a longtime member of Sigma Theta Tau International Honor Society of Nursing. He completed his Lean Healthcare certification at Villanova University, is a nationally recognized speaker, and has published in nationally recognized peer review journals on various perioperative and central sterile subjects. And this makes him such a great guest here on Beyond Clean because we love bringing that interdepartmental perspective together. And also, we've never done an interview, I don't believe, specifically on consulting and what a resource that they can be, Hank. So very excited to have David talk about his experiences in this arena because I know he's been doing it for quite some time.
Yeah, Justin, there's a lot of misconceptions in the industry. And I know as a young sterile processing technician, whenever I heard the word consultant, there was a little tingle down my spine, right, to think, okay, what are these folks going to do? Why are they coming in and how's it going to impact my job? And that wasn't necessarily informed by anything, maybe just some incorrect assumption. So I'm looking forward to digging into the background, the positive reasons maybe that a facility would bring in a consultant and then try to dispel some of those myths.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA and the company is pushing forward offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is David Taylor, independent consultant and owner of Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. And David, you have a great deal of experience in consulting, and that's why we're bringing you on the show today. But this will be your second appearance. You did a really good job last time, and I know it's been quite some time since we last spoke here on the podcast. Really glad to have you back.
It's great being back. Thank you for the invitation.
And so I think we're going to talk a lot about consulting today, and even the title of the episode is Equipping Teams for Excellence. But why don't you start by telling everybody how you got into consulting yourself and what was attractive to you about it?
I became a consultant probably 10 years ago. It's actually been a little over a decade. And my introduction to it was after meeting the chief nursing officer from a pretty prestigious consulting firm. Having several conversations, you know, talking about what she did, the types of opportunities that existed in healthcare, and what a consultant can bring to the table is what really inspired me. Working with healthcare organizations and being a strategic leader, helping them through issues where they can become more profitable, a market leader, or even keeping them out of the newspaper because of some of the things that they're doing is what I really found interesting. I've had a lot of clients travel from Georgia to Alaska, California to New England, been here in South Central Texas all the way up to the northern tip of Minnesota, and every client was different. And that's what's so exciting about consulting is each client is something unique. They all have unique issues or problems that they need solutions to. And that's what I really find interesting about consulting.
And the funny thing is, every client is different and unique. So is every consultant, right? As a fellow consultant now, you know, for about 2 years or so for myself, I learned and am still learning what the inside of the consulting field looks like. And as an industry, I know, or I should say, as a young technician, I know I would hear the word consultant and I would see consultants come in on occasion, but really knowing who these people are and what they do and as you said, how they got into the field, I think is an important part of just educating the industry to maybe appreciate what these folks are doing and, again, the why behind the reasons they may be on site. And I know we'll get into some of that in the interview here. So in talking about the who behind the consultant that may show up at your hospital, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what a typical resume would look like for an OR consultant and or a sterile processing consultant that may come to a hospital.
Sure. That's a great segue into consulting and what opportunities exist. What I found interesting about my consulting experiences is I've met many different people who call themselves a consultant. So I think we need to kind of define consulting just a little bit because you'll have a registered nurse such as myself who has a master's degree, is certified in his profession, and has been working in the field for over 35 years. And I'm a surgical services / CSSPD consultant. You know, I work in the industry. I know I still scrub. I still circulate. I can put instrument sets together. I know the sterilization parameters. I know all of that. The problem, though, is a lot of big firms have consultants that they send on site, and all they do is data, but they're called a consultant. Or they'll send an engineering person in who's a consultant and tells the hospital that they should cut here, cut there, reduce your FTEs, and you'll save millions of dollars, when we all know you don't always have to cut FTEs to be profitable. So looking at consulting overall, what I'd like to focus on is healthcare individuals who have experience in our field and how that transpires.
And David, I've actually been listening to an audiobook recently called The Lords of Strategy, and it's about the growth of the business consulting side, companies like, you know, Bain & Company, Boston Consulting Group, those types of things. And so when businesses bring in consultants, which large businesses regularly have a number of consultants, the purpose is always profit maximization. You know, that's almost always what it's about. What are some of the challenges, particularly for sterile processing, that should make a manager or director say, okay, I need to talk to a consultant?
Depending on the organizational structure for sterile processing, that's kind of the driver for what they should be looking at. If a central sterile processing department needs a consultant, there's a variety of things that they should be looking at and asking themselves the question, why would I need to hire a consultant? One, is the department in trouble? Are they having multiple issues with their sterilizer where they're having failures and they've done all their checks and they've worked with maintenance and nothing seems to be working? Are they having issues with staffing? Are they understaffed? Are they having issues in case cart error rates? Are they having problems with bioburden? Are they having problems in the OR where they can't keep up with the volume of surgical procedures? Are there issues with finances? They can't seem to manage their budget, their productivity, their capital expenditures, those types of things. A lot of times, sterile processing has all of these issues. They try to maintain them themselves, and they don't even know when they have a problem, so they don't typically know that they should be asking for help. It usually is a overlap into the operating room, and the operating room becomes inefficient. And as the OR becomes inefficient, you don't have high rates for your first case on time starts. Your turnover times are long, greater than 25 minutes. You have problems with reprocessing instruments, so you have a high IUSS rate. Those types of things is what really typically drives an organization to say, we might need some help.
I would add, if you see a CNN or maybe a Fox News van in your driveway, that would probably also be cause to call in some consultants. And I've got a shameless plug. A couple of years ago, I wrote an article around Christmas time, and it was called Oh Come All Ye Consultants, and it was talking about the same reasons that you mentioned. You know, why are the reasons behind why it may be a good idea to call in a consultant for help? And those are critical to understand, because in those reasons then are benefits, right? Like, you wouldn't call in a consulting team or an individual if you didn't feel like they could improve on that process. So I know you gave a lot of examples there, but could you speak a little bit about the benefits then of bringing those consultants on site?
Oh, absolutely. We did talk a lot about some of the metrics that, you know, an operating room might utilize to manage its productivity and profitability, and how SPD can be an impact on that. But you said it perfectly. It was, you're a little too late if CNN or Fox News is in your driveway, right? When you see the antenna up and the cameras rolling, that's a problem. And it's kind of a little bit late for a consultant. So that's when the fires need to be put out. But beforehand, when you look at organizations and the organizational structure of sterile, it can sometimes report directly to the chief operating officer, and it bypasses the operating room. But typically, CS would report to the OR director and then up through the C-suite. Now, those individuals in the leadership position, if they're actually strategic and thinking about consulting on how it can benefit them, benefiting them could be financial, which we've kind of touched on, but it can also look at a variety of different things. A healthcare consultant can act as an analyst. They can learn about an organization's operations and help them improve their quality and efficiencies. One of the roles a consultant can play is identifying the problems that they might have, kind of underlying currents that could be causing them the problems prior to CNN showing up into their driveway. They could also look at their staffing models, kind of what they're doing for productivity. How are they staffing their department? Is it staffed appropriately and adequately? Do they have the right people in the right place? So analyzing and assessing their staff and their capabilities. Do they have an education program? And is that educational program effective? Those are a few things that a consultant can do. And if a COO or a chief nursing officer is proactive and strategic and looks at their sterile processing department as a multiplier to surgery, that's key.
And I know, David, I've heard you speak before, and you've talked about actually another benefit that is so critical, because I've been on the other side in departments and facilities that have struggled with this, but there's a very real impact on the culture, or I guess you should say a consultant can have an impact on the culture of a department and a facility. And just in that alone, even outside of metrics and processes, a bad culture can have so many detrimental effects on turnover and retention and communication. And as I said, you've spoken on those things before, but that is often overlooked, I think, in this whole consulting conversation, because how do you quantify a bad culture? If you have turnover metrics, you can quantify it, you know, pretty well. The other impacts, you know, to communication, for instance, are hard to measure, but you can feel it as you walk into some of these places that you need help, and it's got to come from the outside. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You said it perfectly, Hank. Culture is key to every organization's ability to be successful. When I do a consulting opportunity, commonly, culture is a significant barrier to change. Most organizations don't realize the type of culture they have. They think they know that they have a good culture, but when you do a deep dive into the surgical services space, you find a whole different perspective. There's articles written on the attitudes, and there's lots of articles that have been written about the behaviors of healthcare professionals. And it's not always as professional as many might think. So the culture can be very degrading. There can be a bullying effect, if you will, between the two departments. There's not a whole lot of organizations out there that actually work really well together between their surgical services space, perioperative, and the CS department. So the barriers are significant. And if the OR is not working well with, and if CS is not working well with the OR, you've got a problem. Many organizations, though, if they can bring in a consultant that has significant background in education and it has been doing it for a number of years and actually has a good reputation, there's a lot of things that they can do. One is partnering with them as a strategic planner, helping them with performance improvement. You know, strengthening their competitive positioning is key as well. You know, they have to be able to evaluate what's going on the ground and how to get the work done. One consulting opportunity that I had in the Northeast recently, CS could not keep up with demand of the OR. The OR was running approximately 60 rooms a day. And at the end of the business day, which we know surgery never seems to end, but typically around 5 o'clock, CS would have about 1,000 instrument sets to manage. The next day, they'd have between 200 and 500 of those sets still needing to be processed. So the culture there was one of pointing fingers and not being proactive in looking at the situation, devising a plan to fix those problems.
And David, kind of following off of that, I know one of the common criticisms that is laid on consultants in general is that, you know, oftentimes they kind of just show up out of nowhere and then they, you know, they maybe dump an action plan off and then they just disappear just as quickly as they appeared. What should facilities expect from consultants?
That's a great question. And you touched on it. Organizations don't really know what they need because they don't know the problems that they have. So I think we have to back up just a little step in identifying what an organization may want from the consultant. There's a whole laundry list of things that an organization can do is, one, make sure you need one to begin with, right? So examine your current staffing situation, the skill sets, figuring out what variances you've had over the course of a period of time, say a month, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year. When you're looking for a consultant, know what you want that consultant to do. You should have some idea or some clarity about the kind of expertise or assistance you're trying to get from that individual. Be honest about your willingness to change. A lot of organizations say they want to change, but when the consultant shows up, it's obvious that maybe they don't want to change. You want to find somebody that's focused on your needs, not their needs. And what I mean by that is a consultant, I need to know what the organization's needs are and then focus on that, but not what my personal needs are in that consulting opportunity. An organization should check for references. They should be looking for somebody with a good reputation, somebody who's been around a while, doing it a while. Like we said earlier, there's a lot of folks that are entering the consulting field, but they've not been in their own profession for that long, or they've jumped from job to job, say every year, maybe every 2 years. So now they want to try consulting to see if that works. And sometimes that can give consulting overall a bad reputation. You want to choose somebody who's willing to tell you the truth. When I walk into an organization, I tell them I'm going to give you all of the information that I find, you know, whether it's the good, the bad, or the ugly. And I'm going to do that with as much kindness as I can. But if CNN's in the driveway, we got to move very quickly, and it may not be as kind and nice up front. We need to fix things right now and then move forward, and then we can get back to a consulting relationship. You don't want to hire somebody that's going to be a yes person. So every time the C-suite tells you something, you say, oh, yes, we're going to do that, or yes, we're going to do that, or yes, we're going to do that. You got to be able to push back and say no occasionally. And you want to make sure that you're looking at the bigger picture. Can that person overlap multiple departments? I was in a contract recently where they wanted me to expand the contract and work in their ambulatory surgery center and work in the different hospitals that they had in their system. And the contract was really for one hospital. So you have to be able to articulate and talk through things and find out what their true needs are.
And now, David, you referenced earlier, I think, on the fact that there's a lot of folks in the field who call themselves consultants, but they may not have the experience or the credentials necessary to really know what they're talking about. Or if they do know what they're talking about, they may not have the soft skills, as you just referenced, for how to communicate that in the context of a high-stress situation or in a controversial and dramatic kind of context if there's a lot of drama going on between teams. So as a facility who would be looking again at bringing a consultant in, how should these department leaders or these perioperative leaders or C-suite look at distinguishing, and how can they identify between someone who is actually a high quality consultant and someone who's just a pretender?
Well, I think that kind of goes back to an earlier conversation that we had about what kind of resume does a typical consultant have. When we look at nursing, I want to make sure that somebody has a similar education as I have, a similar certification that I have, and has been in the field for a number of years. Nursing is pretty tough on each other and what expectations we have for one another. You wouldn't hire a consultant in, say, surgery who's had 4 or 5 years of surgical experience and has never led an OR. So I have a master's degree. I'm certified in my specialty. I'm lean certified, and I've been consulting for 10 years. In addition to that, I have run ORs from very small to extremely large, and I've run entire systems for surgical services, which had 5 hospitals in that system in one city. So I've had a lot of experiences throughout my career, but I've also had some very large leadership roles. That doesn't make me a great consultant just because I put a shingle on the door and say I'm open for business. But what it does do is it demonstrates that I have a background in surgical services And maybe the things that I have said or will say might make sense because of that experience. Take somebody in sterile processing who's been in the industry for 30 years, has been degreed, maybe has a business degree or other degrees, and are certified. So they've got a long history of working. They've probably seen and done just about everything. And they're educated. So I think that that somebody who's looking for a consultant would look for those types of things.
Is there any difference between an independent consultant and a firm in terms of quality in your experience? I mean, the angle that I'm coming from is, would you be safer as an organization to go with a larger firm if you're having trouble distinguishing in this quality question, or is it better to go with individuals that you can get some individual references from?
If I was a C-suite leader, I would definitely get a variety of different references from my colleagues and peers out there who have used consultants in the past. There is a significant difference in having a smaller boutique type consulting firm versus a very large consulting corporation, if you will. But we have a problem in our industry because now everybody's calling themselves consultants. Take the interim market, for example. 10 years ago, there might have been one or two firms out there that was significantly involved in the interim placement of OR leaders or CSSPD leaders on an interim basis while the hospital was doing their recruiting and hiring. Now everybody has an interim. And more recently, a few of those companies are actually trying to send interims in to do not just the interim day-to-day operations, payroll, manage their staff, keep the rooms running, hit the metrics, but they also want them to act like consultants. We got to be really careful when somebody's listening and says, you know, hiring a bigger firm is better, because it's not necessarily true. You don't know necessarily what they do on a day-to-day basis, but they can provide you somebody to manage your OR and do your consulting and fix all of your process problems. Whereas somebody like myself, which is a boutique firm, I bring together the team of experts that I feel are necessary to run that project. And by doing so, I bring the exact number of people so that an organization doesn't have to spend more money than is necessary to get the same results.
And David, I'm sure there are a lot of managers out there right now who are hearing this and saying, man, I would love to have somebody come in and look at my department, help me out with a few things, but I can't even get approval for formats. How do I get approval to bring in a consultant? What kind of ammunition can you give a manager or a director to be able to go to administration and make the case to bring in a consultant?
Unfortunately, it's not as easy to just give a laundry list of things that these are key words to say, or these are key things that you can do to encourage your leadership to make that decision. You're right. There's hardly any money for capital. There's not enough money to give their staff raises. They're always pushing productivity because the margins are tighter and tighter. So the chance for an organization to actually be proactive and bring in a consultant, that's an added expense that they don't really budget for. Now, flipping it around just a little bit, hospitals would actually be more profitable if they hired consultants on a more regular basis. Business does it all the time. Businesses hire multitude of consultants, whether it's somebody strategic on the ground looking at process improvement or Lean Six Sigma stuff, looking at data, so data can actually drive some of the profitability. If a hospital or healthcare organization did that on a regular basis, we'd be able to cut the time and waste that they have and make them more profitable on a daily basis. And annually, they should be able to make their budget. What do we do best in CS is we manage the stuff. And the stuff is everything. It's the science when it comes to how we have to manage our equipment, whether it's the biological or the DART tests, cleaning our sterilizers appropriately, utilizing our staff to their best capabilities, looking at the assets that we have so we can optimize the investment. We look and explore opportunities so that we can fix the operational structure. And then we look at opportunities ongoing as a project unfolds and how we can better suit the needs of that organization more rapidly. So the best way for this to happen is there's an industry change that says we're going to hire consultants on a more regular basis because we find that their expertise is actually making our leaders stronger, better, and faster.
David, I'm not sure if anybody else has asked this question too, but do you ever feel like sometimes consultants get called in because there's a general staffing issue at the facility that ultimately leads to an issue? And how big does that play in?
I have never been called in just because of staffing. I always seem to get the call when the hospital's in trouble. I'm always getting the call when Joint Commission is on their doorstep and they're frightened because the manager just quit. I'm the guy that they call because CMS came in and gave them a finding and they have five hospitals in their system and it's all under one license, which means if CMS shuts down the one hospital, it shuts down all five. So I've never been called in proactively because of staffing. It's always when there's a problem. Now, if we use what I said previously, COO or chief nursing officer is listening to your podcast and says, you know, I want to be proactive. Call me in or call a consulting firm in that's actually going to give you an assessment of your current situation. The costs are minimal than what it would be if you find yourself with Joint Commission or CMS on your back.
David, I got to imagine, and just from my perspective, I've been a manager before in a department, and I can tell that most of the time the hospital looks to me to be the expert on whatever's going on. And I have to imagine that going to administration and asking them to bring in a consultant is kind of like admitting defeat. It would be terrifying to say that I need help on something. You know, how can you encourage managers to be able to not be afraid of looking like a failure by asking for a consultant?
You bring up a perfect point. As a manager or director, you're hired to be the expert. The difference is, though, in our world today, is we've cut back our staffing and our organizational charts to the bare minimum. Many of our managers in CS are having to put instruments together or working in VCON so that their staff can put the instrument sets together. Many OR leaders and directors are having to scrub and circulate and give their staff lunch breaks. So they're working, everybody's working 60, 65, 70 hours a week. So what you said is right. You should be the expert, but unfortunately, you can't focus in on all the important strategic stuff all of the time. So how can somebody be proactive in this? A lot of organizations are trying to figure out how do they stay ahead of the curve. And that curve is whether it's a CMS visit or whether it's Joint Commission. How do you stay ahead of the curve? Is you can hire a consultant and they can come in and give you the 30,000-foot view, a very inexpensive cost for them to know what the problems are that they might be encountering during one of those surveys. So going to your leadership and explaining such situations is this is what it would cost if we bring somebody in to give us an overview of our organization, of our structure, and our processes. If we don't succeed through a CMS visit, the cost would be a different number, generally much higher because the action plan and all the items that are necessary for them to act on is going to be exponentially more expensive.
Yeah, we are definitely all about the proactive attempts at solving problems ahead of time. You definitely want to get there and have the process improvement long before anybody finds it. And I think some of it is just training people to identify key issues and needs ahead of time and having, you know, really a plan in place and one that they continue to reevaluate and check in with themselves. Because what you sometimes see is people fix one problem over here, and then they go away from it for so long, that problem actually comes back because they're on to solving the next problem instead of maintaining the process. So I'm sure that that is a lot of, you know, some of your consulting approach is how you establish ways and systems that are going to prevent that from, you know, again, falling off the radar and becoming a problem again in the future. But David, this has been an excellent interview. And I think the first one that we've had on consulting in general and where it's helpful. So I just wanted to thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your experience with everyone today.
My pleasure. And thank you again for inviting me to your podcast.
That was David Taylor, independent consultant and owner of Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. And Mike, a lot of good nuggets. And I think, as Hank said in the intro, really looking at consulting in a more positive light, because many times, and you really did ask a great question. I think it was the second to last one of the interview, but just really like, oh no, are they going to find me out? And instead of looking at it very proactively and bringing somebody in with a very targeted focus in an area where, you know, many times we find ourselves a little bit, you know, just not quite ready to tackle an issue, or maybe we've just never dealt with it before. And instead of looking at it as a shortcoming, it's a strength that we would ask for help and make sure that the entire, you know, surgical services line or sterile processing doesn't wind up suffering from sweeping it under the rug, per se.
Yeah, absolutely. And like David mentioned, and I had mentioned earlier, that, you know, in the business and in the manufacturing industries, consultants are normal. Like, it's a normal problem solving, fact finding, process improving. It's a positive process to bring in consultants. And so they make very frequent use of consultants. And it really does seem like it's a tool that is missing all too often from our healthcare setting, particularly in surgical services and SPD. And so much of it does seem to come back down to, we just don't want to admit that we need help. But if you can't admit that you have a problem, it's never going to get better. And so this is exactly why we needed this podcast. We needed this expertise to come in and help us understand that this can be a very positive process.
I like that you reiterated that other industries see this as a very common model, because we do get very focused on healthcare culture, but I've seen a lot of organizations, and especially in the supply chain area, really try to pull people from outside of the healthcare industry to bring in some of those best practices. So that's a really great point, Mike. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any questions for any of our hosts, any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd just like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.